We're doing Proverbs Mishle, a work that was written by King Solomon. We're up to what they call the 13th chapter, the 9th Pasuk. And a quick introduction, Mishle was written as Proverbs, meaning the verses have multiple levels of interpretation. The simple reading of the verse gives you one message, which is important. And as you understand what's behind the scenes, you get another message, which is of a probably greater importance in Mishle. And so, in the previous psukim, we had discussed benefits of different types of behavior. And now, we're up to Pasuk 9. O tzadikim yismach. Earlier, previous semesters, people wanted me to read it with a traditional tune. Do you guys still want me to read it with a traditional tune?
Yeah,
yes.
Sure.
Okay. And people also wanted me to read it with a Hebrew pronunciation, not an Ashkenazi. Yes. Okay.
Ashkenazi.
How many people want Ashkenazi? Let's take a vote. How many people want Hebrew? Okay. Ibu wins. Okay. Sorry, but we're moving, Akiva. It's the first time I get three votes for Ashkenazi. There's definitely a trend here. Okay. O tzadikim yismach. The light of the righteous is happy. V'ner reshaim yidach. And the candle, the lamp of the wicked is hovering as it is flickering, as it is about to be extinguished. So, O tzadikim yismach. The light of the righteous is happy. So, obviously, this is a metaphor. It's as though it's happy.
Burning strong.
Huh?
It's burning strong.
Yeah.
And then the wicked is going up.
Okay. So, light is... light is what you give off to others, right? Ol tzadikim, the light of the righteous, which could mean the soul of the righteous, is happy. V'ner reshaim, and not only the light, but even the source of light of the wicked, is flickering and on the verge of being extinguished. And that's not, it's not the way we perceive it, right? Seems to us always like the wicked are having the time of their life. Seems like they're always happy. So Shlomo Melech reminds us what's really going on. Now, here we have multiple levels of interpretation. Some of the commentaries learn this is talking about the world to come, what's happening. And the Malbim says that's why by the tzaddik we discuss the light, and we don't discuss the source of light, because whereas the wicked, their light is described as a lamp which needs fuel, which needs a wick. But the tzaddikim, their soul keeps on radiating light, and they themselves shine, and they don't need another vessel, so to speak, to give light. Their soul is giving light, and that's the idea of yismach. Yismach is a happiness, an internal happiness, a self-sufficient happiness. There are different types of happiness. There's a happiness when a person finds their spouse. There's a happiness when a person has their first child. There are different types of happiness. That's a happiness that's external. It's affected by, one is affected. Then there's a happiness that comes from leading a proper life. When a person can feel comfortable with where he is in life, with what he's aspiring for in life, he feels like he's on the right path, he feels like he's achieving, he's producing, he's doing right. So then he radiates a certain happiness, a certain light. That's the light of the righteous. That's the happiness of the righteous. It's not contingent on acquisitions. It's contingent on doing what's right, on that productivity, that continuous productivity that gives a person a sense of happiness. Notice I didn't use the word satisfaction. Happiness. That's a type of happiness that a person should strive for. And here I want to pause for 1 second. I heard a phenomenal thought a few months ago in the eulogy for Rav Weitzman, the first rabbi who established our yeshuv, Kohav Yaakov. So they found memoirs, things that he wrote, notes that he wrote to himself. And one of the first notes he wrote to himself was the following thought. And it struck me because it's such an important thought. It seems almost obvious, but I never thought of it. And to me, it really represents a formula for successful living. And perhaps it also represents one of the hardest things for our generation. He writes the following. He says, consistency in one's schedule breeds satisfaction. Very often we are busy learning and our mind wanders to do a mitzvah. We are busy doing a mitzvah and our mind wanders to learning. If we can have consistent focus in our schedule, where we know at this time I should be doing this thing, and we maintain consistency, that is what breeds satisfaction in our lives. Lack of consistency is what breeds frustration. That thought blew me away. Because very often we look at our lives and say, but I'm doing good things. Yes, I'm doing good things. The question is, am I consistent? He wasn't a yaki. I'm saying we how often are we consistent in the same minyan? We daven at the same time. We consistently go to the same shir. We have a half hour in our day where we learn. We have a half hour in our day where we daven. I had a friend.
We have to be like all the time doing something?
That's not the point. The point is, I'll tell you. There was a Hasidish Rebbe who gathered in his Hasidim. And he said, look, tell me what time you want davening to start on Shabbos. You want 8? We'll do 8. You tell me 8 is too early, we'll do 9. You say 9 is too early, we'll do 10. But whatever hour we decide on, I want everyone to be there on time. I had a friend who used to, he was an accountant. He is an accountant. And he'd end his workday at like 5. He'd come home, eat dinner with his wife. And then from about 6:30 till 12 o'clock every night, he would learn. His wife wanted him at home. She didn't want him to go to Beis Medrash. So he said, fine. He had a little study. And he'd sit there and learn till 12 o'clock every night. Now, if you're learning till 12 o'clock at night, it's a little hard to get up to the 6 o'clock minyan. And he was a steady at the 8:15 minyan. 8:15, 8:30. And every so often I'd oversleep and I'd come to the 8:30 minyan and see him there. And it always struck me. I always thought, you know, lazy people go to the 8:30 minyan. You know, if you're a productive person, you get up early, you go to an early minyan. And I looked at this guy and I said, he consistently learns every night till midnight. You're talking about he finished Shas a few times, he finished the whole Codex, the whole Shulchan Aruch a few times. Every year he would finish the whole Torah with another commentary. Every year he'd finish the Haggadah with another commentary, Pirkei Avos with another commentary, because he was consistent, because he had a set schedule. And even though that set schedule included a minion, that was like the lazy man's minion at 8:30 in the morning, but he was consistent and he was always there on time. So being consistent doesn't necessarily mean always waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning. It can mean always waking up at 7:30. But if I can have a set schedule where I always get up at 7:30 and I always go to that minyan, so that's great. You don't have to fight yourself to get up at 6, but be consistent. The problem is that we fight ourselves to get up at 5. Once a week we get up at 5. The rest of the week we get up at 8. Once a week we make it to the shir we want to. The rest of the week we don't. And then we look and we say, I'm not so bad. I'm still going to shir. Right? Come on, we're all that way. I'm saying that's our generation. Just so you guys have a nice Dvar Torah to say at the Shabbos table, I'll tell you this is a quick thought from this week's parsha. The Sephorno says on this week's parsha, we have the mitzvos of the Kohanim, Parshat Emo. The Kohanim, they're commanded not to become defiled. They're limited in who they may marry. They have to be careful, they have to be pure. And then after the Torah discusses the servants of the temple, then the Torah discusses the animals of the temple. Which animals may you bring as a sacrifice? And the Torah says you can't bring an animal that's blind or an animal that's lame. All kinds of limitations. And then the Torah says, and even a castrated animal. You know, kings would always try to have castrated animals. You don't want to be walking your dog down the street and suddenly a female dog out there is in heat and your dog's gone wild off on the leash, right? So the kings would always castrate their animals. You're in the middle of a war and your horse is suddenly taken by the heat of another horse and it goes wild and you can't control it. So kings would consider it an asset to have an animal that's castrated. And even if someone would think, I'm offering the greatest animal in honor of God, comes the Torah and says, you may not offer a neutered animal. You may not even neuter an animal. It's biblically prohibited to castrate an animal, to make it into a eunuch, to make it impotent, incapable of having children. So the Torah prohibits doing that. Now, the Sephorno comments, he says, you can have an animal that has a limp or that's blinded in one eye, but it's big and fat and it's worth a ton of money. Comes the Torah and says you cannot offer that animal. You can offer a cheaper animal, but it has to be whole. The Torah is teaching us a concept. God is whole. He is Tamim. He is the one who's whole. We in life have to aspire to be whole. We don't have to aspire to be millionaires. We don't have to aspire to have the greatest assets. We have to aspire to attain wholeness. What's happening when you bring a sacrifice is you're trying to fill in a void. So that animal is supposed to represent the idea of wholeness. It's not representing value. It's representing wholeness. And that's why the Torah prohibits bringing an animal that itself is lacking, because that runs contra to the concept of the sacrifice. The sacrifice is helping us get back to wholeness. So that's an idea that our 21st century, it's foreign to us. You know, people post online. No one cares if you have spelling errors. Today, you can send a text message, you can write a letter, you can post things on your blog, on your Twitter, and no one cares. It's like a given. Yeah, I got it out there. But there are mistakes. That doesn't matter. We're in a world where our focus is on value and not on wholeness. And the Torah reiterates this idea, strive for wholeness. There's tremendous value in wholeness. Part of the hallmark of the tzaddik is that he has wholeness in his life. We call ourselves overachievers, but in truth, we are confused achievers. We don't realize our limitations, so we end up staying awake too late, then getting up knocked out, oversleeping. If we don't oversleep, then we must have that coffee. What's wrong with us? We're a coffee culture. What's right about that? I like coffee, but it's wrong if I need coffee. We have to be achieving in accordance with our capacity. We're looking for wholeness. We're not looking to be overachievers. We're looking to achieve correctly within a holistic, correct framework. O tzadikim, the light of the righteous, yismach, is happy because it goes hand in hand. I'm shining what I could shine. I'm doing what I could do, what I can't do. I say, I'm sorry, I can't. And then I can attain happiness. V'ner reshaim gidach. The lamp of the wicked is hovering. And that's even the source of light is inconsistent. It's up, it's down, it's inconsistent. Pasuk Yud.
Wait, wait, wait. Ner isn't a lamp, it's a candle.
In modern Hebrew. In ancient Hebrew, ner is a lamp.
Okay. But we didn't have lamps back
then. Sure they did. Of course they did. You go to museums, you look at right. Lamp, you know, like the Aladdin's lamp, right?
Never mind.
You had a wick and you had an oil lamp. I didn't make it up. Rashi in Tractate Shabbos says every time you have ner, Rashi says the French word. We have any French speaking people? Yeah? Rashi says kreuzel. Kreuzel. Kreuzel, krausel, kreuzel. Kuf resh vav yud zamed lamed.
Old French, I guess.
Maybe. How do you say a lamp in French today? Krausel, krausel?
A lamp?
Lamp.
No.
An oil lamp. An oil lamp.
Infuel?
Huh?
Infuel.
Okay. I think so. Okay. I think it's old French.
Yeah.
It's
called,
no, it's called old French.
Okay.
Yeah.
Say that. Back to prosecute. Rak bezadon yiten matzah. If a person's actions are always brazen, so then a person who is always brazen in your face, so then yiten matzah. That type of behavior will cause fights. Ve'et no'atzim chokhma. Whereas people who think about their actions, there you will find wisdom. They will avoid conflict. Very often our generation thinks, if I'm right, I'm going to go for it all the way. I'm not giving in. Who said? Maybe if you give in, you'll accomplish more. Sometimes the fight is destructive. Even if you win, sometimes the fight is destructive. You don't always have to win a fight. Sometimes you have to know how to get around it. Rak bizadon. If a person says, no, I'm only going my way or the highway. Yiten matzah. So then that breeds fighting. And very often we find that the wise men, they wait. The greatest story is Rav Shmuel, Rav, came out to Babylon. It was Rosh Chodesh, just like today. In ancient times on Rosh Chodesh, the way they'd say Hallel was every verse the Chazan would read and the congregation would repeat Hallelujah. Okay, so you're reading a verse and everyone goes Hallelujah. You're reading a verse, everyone goes Hallelujah. Rav comes out to Babylon. He's supposed to be the chief rabbi. He's supposed to tell him what to do, right? So he comes to Babylon, and in Israel, they didn't have this custom of saying Hallel on Rosh Chodesh. It's a custom that evolved over time. So in that time, we're talking about only 1,700 years ago, okay? So a millennium and a half ago, a little bit more than that. They didn't yet have this custom of saying Hallel in Israel on Rosh Chodesh. So he comes out to Babylon. He's the chief rabbi. So he's standing in the front of shul. And they finish Shachris. And suddenly, he hears them making a blessing. And the Chazan starts saying a verse of Hallel. And the whole congregation goes, Hallelujah. Now, in those days, they didn't have a sitter, right? Everything was by heart. So Rav knew they were saying Hallel. And he's standing there scratching his head, trying to think, what are they doing? So what would we do? We'd stop and say, ladies and gentlemen, what are you doing? I'm the rabbi here. I come from Israel. I learned by Rebbe, the chief rabbi of Israel. And we don't do this. Rav is quiet. They finish the first chapter of Hallel. And Rav is wondering, what are they doing? And he doesn't say anything. And they finish the second chapter of Hallel. And then they did what we do. They skipped the chapter. Now remember, it took them some time. Because they were reading verse by verse, responsive with the congregation, right? So he's waiting, let's say, 2 to 3 minutes in silence. And then they skip a chapter. And he says, whoever skips in Hallel, oh, this must be a custom they do out here in Babylon. But you see how slow Rav was to react. Because just because you know a lot, doesn't mean you should be talking a lot. So they're doing something. Wait, see, you know, Ve'et no'atzim chokhmah. Wisdom comes with people who take counsel, with people who are willing to take advice and think it through with other people. Then you avoid fights. And again, most often when fights erupt, so then everyone's a loser. Even if you win the fight, it's rare that fighting is worth it.
What kind of fight are you talking about?
Even religious fights, even for religious things. It's almost always more intelligent to go quietly and achieve what you want. It's rare that it's in your interest to stand up and make a fight. In many things, people think if I stand up for my rights, I'll win. Maybe and maybe not. There are times when you have to stand up for things. But when a person's philosophy is, that's what the Pasuk said in the beginning, Rak bizadon, I only go my way, and he's brazen about it, when his attitude is, I will always fight for my rights, so then he will always fight. He will always he will develop fights, even with, among other people. Pasuk Yud Aleph. I was sitting next to a businessman, and this is a guy who owns... He owns buildings, he owns malls, he has a lot of businesses running. You know, his turnover in a year is in the tens of millions, just in profit. And he said to me once, he said to me as a side comment, he said to me, you can't imagine how quickly a person can fall, can lose all his assets. And it was surprising to hear it from him, because sometimes you think a guy's in real estate. He told me, I know a lot of people who have millions. They own millions upon millions in real estate. But how much do they owe the bank? And what happens when the real estate suddenly goes down, or there's a 9/11, or suddenly the market crashes, they've overextended themselves, or suddenly, I knew a few investors who invested in Florida. They made a mint here in Israel. They figured they're going to make more money. They bought a ton of property in Florida, and they were making excellent rent until someone slipped in one of their properties. Here from Israel, they didn't know they have to have liability insurance. And suddenly they were sued. The guy who hurt himself in their property discovered he could sue them, that that the owners of the buildings are very wealthy. And they were sued for all their profits. They lost all their profits overnight. Everything they made down in Florida, they lost. You're talking about people who had enough money to buy condominiums. They lost everything to this one court case. So sometimes, that's what Shlomo Amelch says in our Pasuk, Pasuk Yudalef. Hon mehevel yimat. Even a hon, a great mass of wealth, mehevel yimat. From nothing, it can all dissipate, it could be diminished. Hon, a great wealth, mehevel, from nothing, from air, yimat, can be diminished. Vekovetz al yad yarbe. And when a person can save consistently again and again, he will ultimately find himself amassing a great wealth. And this is one of the points which I think the Americans can learn from the Europeans.
Can you repeat that?
Hon mehevel yimat, a great wealth from thin air can be diminished. Vekovetz al yad, and he who takes a handful each time, he gathers a handful at a time, yerbe, he will find his wealth amassing. Now, this I see on a consistent basis that there are two types of habits running in the world. In the United States, people spend what they don't have. You know, a guy can have 50 shekel in his bank account, and you'll see him out buying a popsicle stick, and you ask yourself, that popsicle stick cost you 8 shekel. That's more than 8 shekel out of 50. What percentage is that? That's about 6-7% of your assets you just spent on a popsicle stick. And in Europe, somehow the educational system is very, very strong on this idea of conserving and building up a savings account. And over time, people can have a lot of money. Very often people make this mistake when they're younger, so then they say it's not a big deal, I can buy a car and I can allow myself to do A or B or C. Wait a second, how much would you save if you didn't do that? Meaning there's a price, and we don't think about that price. What often happens is that a person doesn't have a concept, I can buy a house, I can buy an apartment. You know, here in Israel you can buy an apartment for 250,000 shekel. You go down south, you can get an apartment, you could rent it out, you could have a steady income of 1,000, 1,500 shekel a month without working. Now, how are you going to get to that 200,000? So if you think about it, let's take a car, for example. The average cost of a car is in the range of 2,000 shekel a month, assuming you don't have too many problems. Okay, 2,000 shekel a month. After 2 years, you're a quarter of the way there. That's a... right? 24,000 shekel. I'm not even talking about the cost of the car. I'm talking about gas, insurance, test, depreciation of value, and minor fixes. The average cost of a car per month is about 2,000 shekel. So think about it. That's 24,000 shekel a year just on that. Now, some people say, I can't work without it. Fine. I'm not saying it's the right move for every person. I'm just saying people don't think about it. It's a convenience that's a given. Now, if I could put away between 1 and 2,000 shekel a year, so then in the course of 2 years, I already have 50,000. I already have, I'm a quarter of the way there. In 2 years, that's not a lot of time. So again, perspective. Kovetz al yad. If I could slowly but surely put money away. People take the change of their pocket and they put it in the pushka. Now, that's a good thing. It's a good mitzvah. On the other hand, the person should think out how much charity he should give. And the rest of his change should really be going away. We had a guy here who was giving a lot of money to charity. He would donate food to the Machon. He catches me one day and says to me, my rabbi tells me I'm wrong because I'm giving too much to charity. So I said to him, you got 6 kids, 7 kids? 5 kids? I don't remember how many kids he had. I said, you haven't get married off one. Your eldest is 15 or 16, right? He's going to get married. Do you have a house to give him? No. I said, wait a second. You have 5 kids to marry off. Is it right that you're helping all these people? You're giving more than 20% of your income. You're giving away to charity. Go start buying real estate. You should have a house for each kid. Save that money that you're giving away. Let's say you're giving away 500 shekel a month extra to charity. Do the math, guys. Over a year, you're already at 6,000 shekel. 6,000 shekel compounded. Laat laat, that's money. You can marry off a kid with that money. So saving accounts are important. It's important to try and set up, especially when you're younger. The difference between setting up a saving account at 25 and 35 is millions when you get older. And people don't think about it in their young age. Kovetz al yad, says Shlomo HaMelech, if you put aside little by little, and that's why it's important sometimes to do it as a set thing, the banks will do it for you.
Please, don't say savings accounts anymore. It's nothing worth it anymore.
What?
Savings accounts is nothing worth anymore today.
I don't know. I say savings account for one reason. Because it's no risk and people end up having the money.
But you're losing money in savings.
I understand, but people lose more by not saving. The flip side is that's one of the reasons we tell people to buy a house. People say, technically, if I didn't buy the house and I saved the money, I'd pay much less than the interest. That's true if you'd really be putting the money away. The reason I say savings account is because if people don't do a savings account, they don't know what they're doing in investments, and then they usually end up losing more than they gain.
I'm just saying, there's also vehicles that you don't have to look after. You can make a steady...
Okay, you got to be very careful. You got to be very careful because people's pensions plans here in Israel, in the last 10 years, many people's pension plans went up in smoke. They were making money until they lost it all. So you got to really know what you're doing when you're doing something other than a saving account. The advantage of a saving account, and that's why I'm saying real estate, you can have, hopefully, a steady income. Saying it without working. The key is to have income without working. You want to develop assets that will give you income without working. Shlomo HaMelech says, how do you get there? Kovetz al yad. Slowly but surely, you put away a little bit today, a little bit tomorrow. But it has to be consistent. Kovetz al yad. You take a little bit at a time. Yes, Larry.
I think what you're saying about the savings account, I tend to agree with him when I have one, but... I mean, I think the most useful thing about a saving account is just the putting aside the money. And
right.
Out the interest. Because as far as interest goes...
Agreed.
Seriously, you get like 10 shekels a year.
Agreed. Agreed, I'm not looking at that.
You're better off not buying a popsicle, really. Like, you're better off by not buying a pop... You make more money a year by not buying stupid things than you'd ever make an interest in a savings account.
Granted.
Or putting in advertising or investing the money in any other thing.
Fine. I'm not saying where a person should invest. What I am saying is a person should be saving. Where you put those savings, be careful. That's all I can say. Our sages tell us that this pasuk has applications to our learning as well. Our sages say that hon, an amassment of wealth in Torah knowledge, mehevel yim'at. If you have gaps of air in between that Torah knowledge, then slowly but surely you lose it. People think, I could come to Machon Meir for a month, leave for a year, come back for another month. Well, 1 month plus 2 months, 1 month plus 1 month does not equal 2 months. Meaning, 2 months of consistency has greater value than 2 months that are separated. Hon, even an amassment of wealth, of knowledge, mehevel, when you have gaps in between that knowledge, yim'at, you end up forgetting, you end up losing. Obviously, it's better this way than that. We had a student here for years who would fly in from England every year in his midwinter vacation. He'd come for 3 weeks every year. He did this like for 5 years running. Okay, so that was great learning for him. You know, it's better than nothing. But you should know that the longer you can go, as consistent learning, the more you'll be able to build. The Kovetz al Yad, he who is consistent, but he takes a little bit, and then a little bit more, and then a little bit more, Yarbe. I'll tell you an interesting story. When I was learning in Rabbi Feinstein's yeshiva, so when I came to the yeshiva, I was learning an average of 2 to 3 chapters Mishnayos a day. So that's a pretty nice pace. You finish Shas in about a year. And I had only 1/6 of Shas left to finish Shas Mishnayos. I had finished 5/6 going at that pace before I came to his yeshiva. I had 1/6 of Shas left. Okay. So Rabbi Feinstein used to give a class every morning after prayer, doing 2 Mishnayot every day. When I came to the yeshiva, he was only halfway through Shas. So I looked at his class doing 2 Mishnayot a day, and I said to myself, I'm doing 2 to 3 chapters a day. Why should I bother going to his class? But then I looked at my schedule and I said, you know, but I don't get to learn Mishnah too much during the day. I used to spend 4 hours a day doing it. Then I do 2 to 3 chapters. I said to myself, I'll get to it. So I didn't go to his class and I didn't do my learning and I kept thinking I'll get to it. And a short while later, not such a short while later, I suddenly hear people in the back going, L'chaim. And I said, what's going on? And they said, we're having a siyum. We finished Shas. So in their steady 2 Mishnayos every morning, they overtook me, right? The tortoise and the hare. Slow and steady. They kept going. And I didn't bother going. I said to myself, you know, I've been doing so much more. I'm going to finish 2 or 3 rounds before they ever finish. No, they were consistent and I wasn't. Kovetz al yad, in learning, if I can have consistency, even those 2 minutes a day, then a person amasses a great wealth. So this goes back to the idea we've been discussing, how the strength of consistency. We're going to have to...